Today on Worst Ever, we have an actress by the name of Stacey Keenan.
Love her.
You probably know Stacey Keenan from My Two Dads.
I do.
Which is where I fell in love with Stacey Keenan when I was probably 8 or 9 years old.
Like lesbianic style?
No, like I really wanted her to be my sister in real life.
Cut two.
Then she became my quasi sister.
Stepsister.
On right. Step by Step. The other thing I remember Stacey in was a movie called Lisa, which we're going to talk about today, because it was with Cheryl Ladd, played her mother, and it was like a really scary, kind of horrific movie for any child to be watching. But for some reason, it just like really resonated with me, and I watched it over and over again.
See, and I'm more interested in hearing about her new career.
She has made a very significant transition in her life from being an actor to being a prosecutor. That's right. She's a lawyer. So yeah. We're going to talk about the differences.
I love Nancy Grace.
I don't think she's...
I know, but still, I want to talk a little Nancy Grace.
Okay. Anyway, sit back, relax, go back to the 90s a little bit, and enjoy our conversation with Stacey Keenan.
Bombshell, unleash the lawyers.
The worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl, hey, that's bad.
So speaking of like worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best served funny. Welcome to the Worst Ever podcast. I'm Christine Lakin.
And I'm Alakalette.
Are you sure? Who are you today?
Yeah, who is this guy?
We're having mimosas, so it's going to be a little fun.
This is a very special episode for me because I have my old friend and former sister from another Mr. and Mrs. I don't know how you say it in the biz. But anyway, Stacey Keenan on the show with us today. Stacey, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
But she did. Okay, before we get into your history, were you guys sisters like?
We played stepsisters.
You were stepsisters.
So yes. I was Suzanne Summers' daughter.
And I was
from
Patrick
a previous
Duffy's.
Marriage.
So you were a Lambert.
Yes, correct.
And I was a Foster.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
I love how you just know those two names.
I did a little research on the Step by Step today. Okay, so then, but before that Step by Step happened, I mean, not Step by Step, My Two Dads was before that?
Yes.
Or after?
Right. My Two Dads was before that. And then I did a show in between the two that was only on for one season, and then it got canceled. And then Step by Step started.
But Stacey's been, I mean, you had worked in the industry since you were
four.
Really little. I mean,
yeah.
For anyone who's familiar with My Little Pony.
Shut it.
Stacey sang the theme song to My Little Pony.
That's
a little known fact, people.
Yeah.
Wait, My Little Pony.
Yes.
My Little Pony, you can comb her hair. I think it was something like that.
It was My Little Pony. Yeah, it was the same, same melody for years. Yeah.
What age were you when you did that?
Oh, probably 8 to 10, maybe, because I went in all the time. I sang all of the jingles for all the spots, you know, because every different pony, there would be a different commercial, and then I would sing the jingle.
Cha-ching.
Well, and I also did the My Little Pony movie. I sang on the soundtrack. And then eventually they fired me because I couldn't. They wrote a spot with a really, really high note. It was an actual high C. Ooh. And I was still a little girl. You know, my voice hadn't changed up yet. And I couldn't hit the high C. And they fired me. And they replaced me with a like post-pubescent girl whose voice had changed, who could hit the higher notes. She was like 14 or something.
What's the big deal? Change
That's what I said. Because I had been,
Mattel,
you know,
did not agree.
A reliable performer for years for them. But yeah, they canned me.
And then when did you start My Two Dads? How old were you?
11 when we did the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And 12 by the time the show was picked up.
Yeah, because I saw, I watched
five?
That show.
5 years?
Only three.
Oh, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
My God. I loved that show so much.
I vaguely remember. I remember, like, I can picture it. But the premise was...
Paul Reiser, Greg Evigan. They were basically... It was basically like two men and a baby, kind of.
Right.
But she wasn't a baby. She was like a tween.
So the premise was the two of them were best friends. I think it was best friends growing up. But anyhow, mm-hmm. they went to college together. They fell in love with the same woman. She was in love with both of them. They had a huge fight over it and then all went their separate ways because they couldn't resolve the fact that they were both in love with her. She was in love with both of them. And then she ended up, you know, being with each of them. She ends up being pregnant and she doesn't tell either of them
whose baby you are.
Well, she doesn't know because it's all at the same time anyway. So then she ends up having this baby, never telling them about it. And then when the kid is 12, she dies. And in her will, she decrees that the two of them need to come back together, heal their friendship, and both be parents to the kid. And she insists that they not find out who the father is because she wants this kid to have a family with these two guys as her parents. So there was a lot of beef at the beginning of people saying, well, why wouldn't they just find out who the father is? It's so easy. I don't even think there was DNA testing commonly. But you could still even do like a blood test, you know, blood type or whatever. And there was a lot of, you know, criticism about that. And it was like, no, all of that was very clearly set up in the pilot. Of course they could find out, but they're not going to, you know, they still love this dead woman, you know, then they're not gonna disobey what she tells them.
That was a Michael Jacobs show.
Yes.
Who then created Boy Meets World, Girl Meets World.
80s, late 80s.
That's kind of progressive for the late 80s, I feel.
Listen, let's talk about progressive. If we're gonna talk television for a minute, we've gone backwards. We're so politically correct now.
I know. No, it's true. We think about like All in the Family and the things that we're saying.
All in the Family, Jeffersons. My two dads, who would have known, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't a gay couple.
No,
they were straight guys.
Still, the whole pregnant thing, whatever. Was this during the Punky Brewster times?
I think Punky might have been a little bit earlier because I remember Punky Brewster had an episode where the space shuttle blew up. And her whole class was watching. So what year was that?
God, I lived in Florida. I mean,
I was in North Carolina.
Okay. I was probably like 5.
I was in junior high.
Yeah, and I remember watching Punky Brewster when we lived in New York, and we came out here for pilot season.
I want to say that was like 84.
Right, and I think this show started in 87. Yeah. But, I mean, even then, there was an episode where Greg Evigan's character, there was a lot of ladies on that show. They were always dating all these, and so many of those women went on to be, like, famous movie stars and stuff. It's funny. But anyway.
Like who? Who else was on the show?
Oh, okay. Of course, now I say that, and I can't think of her name. But the one that always comes first to my mind is the beautiful redhead who was married to Jim Carrey. She was on Picket Fences. No, you can't think of it either. But I can picture her face. Super pretty.
Yeah, you know.
Red hair, freckles.
Oh,
fair skin.
She was in the movie, the Mask movie with Jim Carrey too, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
But she was in Picket Fences where she played a cop forever. But she was one of the
Stephen's
girlfriends.
Stephen's doing the research.
There was tons of these women who went, you know, had these big careers. But because every week there was another couple of women that they were dating. But anyway, there was a scene where Greg is in bed with a woman, and if you remember, his bed was like in the living room,
right, of this
loft. And so Paul Reiser and I, you know, we come home and he's in bed with her. And you see him kind of spin around in the bed, and you saw his entire back. Now, you didn't see his behind. You didn't see, you know, any crack or anything, but there were advertisers who pulled their spot. They left our show because you saw him in bed with a woman and you saw his whole back, and they were like, I think Best Foods Mayonnaise was one of the ones that was done with my two dads.
I love Best Foods.
From that point
forward.
They're
very religious Best Foods.
They were not feeling that
at all. If they
want
to sponsor this podcast, I'm with it.
It's a good product. But I'm saying,
I use it for my egg salad, let me tell you right now.
Yeah, they were not on board with the naked back, a man's naked back.
Okay, so you did that for 3 years, and then Step by Step happened? Or no,
and then there was a show called Going Places.
Yeah, Going Places, that was on.
It's right in the middle.
Which I'm also amazed that you know that. Yeah, it was on for one season. It was the same producers.
I mean, let's just be very clear. I feel like I made this fairly clear for all the small group of people that heard my speech at Stacey's post-wedding celebration, but I had basically tracked Stacey's career until we became sisters on Step by Step, and then I was like, holy fuck, I mean the jackpot.
Stacey
came to my sister. You were stepsisters.
We were stepsisters. No, but we were real life sisters. Okay.
Real life sisters.
Well, this is where I want to get to right now for just this segment. So you get this show, both of you, right?
Yeah.
And you hear, you know the premise, obviously, you read the pilot and whatever. And it's all these kids. How many kids are on the show?
Six.
Okay. Hold on a second. Because I, you know, I've been with women, right, who've had shows with just three girls, and it's like, there's drama.
Right. No, okay? we were drama free.
We were
impossible.
No, it's completely true.
It was drama free for us.
Well, here's the, and I think here's some of the dynamic why I think now as an adult looking back on it. First of all, you had these two stars, right? You had Patrick Duffy, Suzanne Summers. If anyone was going to be a diva, it was going to be one of them.
And they weren't.
And they weren't.
And they got along together great. They really enjoyed each other. They had a great vibe. And they were just super fun and nice.
Chill
and friendly and joyful.
So like if the two biggest stars on the show aren't going to be like full of drama and they're going to be nice to everybody and happy to show up to work and responsible and on time and caring
and have
loving
no
and
diva
generous,
stuff, none.
Then who's to say that like any kid on that show had any place? They were like, I wouldn't say there were, it wasn't drama at all, but there was like, you know, like we would always laugh at like Brandon Call because he would show up with like a different like fancy car. He was like 16 and making a lot of money, right? So he would always have some crazy fancy car and he had these crazy pinky rings that had like gold in them.
It's diamonds.
Like his hair back. I mean, we made fun of him relentlessly, for sure. But in front of his face and to him. And he made a lot of fun of us.
And were there any attractions to any of the other cast members?
Not for me, no. It really was, I don't think you, well, wait a minute.
Chris Castile had a definite crush on me.
Yeah.
I heard.
I can see that. I think he hit it pretty well.
Yeah.
And he definitely didn't talk about
it. Well, and he knew that, like, we weren't, I mean, he was so my little brother.
And right. And, well, and you dated a certain cast member.
Well, you could tell. You can reveal it.
Yeah, we talked about that.
We don't hide.
I did. Yes. I dated Andrew Keegan for like 2 weeks.
But
it's not the only one.
Oh, look
who
at you.
Who else did I date?
Jeff Judae.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Jeff Judae.
Of course. Well, yeah.
That's when I met you.
I forgot about Andrew Keegan. I wasn't even talking about that.
Jeff Judae was on the show?
Yeah. So the second to last season of our show, we go and do this. Jeff Judae came on as this character. Basically, Cody had left the show, Sasha Mitchell. He had had some personal issues.
Maybe that was probably the most dramatic thing that ever happened.
And that was the only thing. Right.
Yeah.
But.
And that was, you know, he had some personal stuff and he had to go deal with that. And I think they were, you know, this is back in the days of like television when they were like, oh, we had a wacky character. Now that wacky character has to leave the show.
We need another wacky character.
So they brought this guy on to play this character, Flash, and he worked for Frank, but he was kind of a spazoid. And Jeff.
That was Jeff.
So Jeff came on, played that.
I have to watch that because he's
recurring.
He was so clean cut.
Oh, very.
Very.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so he came on, he was on for 2 episodes. I thought he was super funny. He was very sweet.
He's so
sweet. A bunch of times. You know, I was like a senior in high school. No, I was a junior in high school. And he was like 21, 22.
Yeah.
Like,
and fresh if I recall, your parents were like, not really feeling that whole
thing. No. And you ended up living with him.
Well, no. We went to do 2 episodes in Florida, which is a whole...
the Disney episode.
We're in Disney World.
Basically living in Disney World.
Yeah, I'm calling it out.
I'm so excited because I'm, you know, part of that week was like my spring break week, so I didn't have to be in school. This is the other thing, like people don't understand.
When you're
on a TV show, you go to do something in Hawaii or you go to do something in Florida and it sounds like it's this amazing vacation. Well, if you're in school, you're still like in some weird like
room.
Hotel room doing school work with your tutor. You're not just like running amok
partying
all the time.
Yeah.
Except I get that.
No, I know that. I know that life's what I'm saying to you is though you had time to have a relationship with Mr. Jet.
Well, some things happened in Florida. We ended up going to like downtown Disney one night. I may have been the
downtown.
Purveyor
you mean
of trying
Pleasure
to
Island?
Yep. Right, Pleasure
yeah.
Island.
Mannequins.
We went to Mannequins.
I know.
Yeah, we went out. We went dancing.
I will definitely say I was the one to steal some beers or try to procure beers. That was always me, hiding them in my baby backpack, like being a bad kid. And I think there was some kissing that happened on the Mannequins revolving
the
dance
revolving dance floor.
Dance floor, exactly.
Mannequins. I used
but
to sneak in that
we dated
club
for 4 years.
Yes, yeah. they were a serious
he was
item.
Like my first boyfriend.
And that was able
first,
to happen.
First,
yes.
Everything.
Yes.
We had Minders.
Married, has two children. I love his wife.
Yes. We had Minders. Do you remember?
We had Minders.
Disney assigned these people to us where then they were supposed to be with you the entire, anytime you were not in the hotel room, they were assigned to be with you.
You were pretty much like representing Disney.
But you know why that is? And I'm going to tell you why. Because of the Mickey Mouse Club. All those kids went amok from and they learned, I'm not kidding. So Disney was like,
oh, so they can't be in the clubs being like mm-hmm. crazy.
Well, yeah, it was while we were on property or right. whatever. You yeah. had these Minders right. and they wore uniforms.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. With
the the women had a skirt that was like, you know, knee length or T-length and a flat shoe yep. of some sort yes. and like a little vest
and
with a white blouse underneath mm-hmm. and a badge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you tried to go out without them, they would just appear because other people would rat on you.
Yes.
People would call and be like, she's spotted right now, yeah. you know, at the candy store at Epcot right. or whatever. Yeah. And this person would just materialize
would just, like,
and you were just
pop up. They're like,
busted.
Hello.
Yeah.
No, no, and you're no. like, FYI, guys, I used to work at Epcot and I had to go through Morocco. Disney University because you have to go through a 3-day training thing where you, when I say training, it is like, no offense, I love you, Disney. Very culty. Like, it's crazy, the restrictions. And you have to know everything. And those people that you're talking about, they're like in the
upper echelon.
Well,
Beth, who was my
Minder,
were
leads.
She was not happy with my antics. However, Jeff's Minder was all about getting us into the 21 and over club. And I think at one point, Beth was like, I wash my hands of this situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
I
remember that.
She was like, I will not be a part of this. And I was like, see ya, Beth. Like, I was like, I'm 16. I don't give a shit. I'm going into mannequins.
Oh, my God. Like, yeah. And they were... There was one of the Minder guys had a beer one time at lunch. Do you remember that?
Yes,
and somebody told on him.
He got
in trouble.
Big time.
Yeah, it was a weird thing. I spent a lot of that time in the hotel room by myself, like Elvis Presley, with all the lights off and the air cranked to like 55 degrees. I was reading Helter Skelter at the time.
This.
And I just laid in bed and read Helter Skelter and was like, I'm just going to stay here because otherwise I got this lady like glued on. I can't, you know.
And we're trying to get her out and she's like, you know what? I'm good. And I'm like, oh my God, she's depressed. She's just reading Helter Skelter in her hotel room. I think we have to kidnap her. But then like Jeff wanted to make out. So I was like, bye.
Oh my God,
I know, I'm
so
the worst.
See ya.
Wait, did you audition for Step by Step or was it an offer?
Ooh, no, I didn't. It was an offer. Yeah, because it was the same producers as Going Places. And I remember Going Places was an ill-fated show that was on for one season. It had Heather Locklear.
Oh, right.
It was about a bunch of like young single people living in a fabulous house that they would never be able to afford in real life for the jobs that they had. And then, yeah, it was two guys and two girls living together in this house. And I was the neighbor girl whose parents were always traveling and working. And I was just this kind of lonely kid. And I would just kind of come next door to like hang out with these cool people, you know, and whatever, give them an opportunity to be, I guess, likable people that
right.
are nice to the little girl next door who's kind of lonely. Yeah. So, yeah, I remember screen testing for that or testing, whatever you call it. And then, yeah, they offered step by step.
And you... Anything that you were offered that you've turned down that you regret now?
Twin
Peaks. No.
Oh, are you kidding? I would have died. I loved that show. I couldn't
coming
wait
back.
I know.
For those
May.
Episodes to come out. I would just be hanging, just dying, waiting. No, I was never offered any part of Twin Peaks at all. I'd have to think about that. I mean, there's definitely been things where I looked back at it and was like, oh, huh, that turned out to be something other than what it seemed like when I read it. But nothing life-changing, I don't think. Nothing that really stands out.
By the way, if you haven't seen the movie Lisa, I highly recommend it. Stacey's in it.
Thank you.
It's from the late 80s. You made that 89?
I think I turned 14 while we were shooting.
It's like a scary movie. But somehow I watched it when I was like 8
9 and I became obsessed with. It's like a horribly scary movie, but I loved it.
Yeah, it's about a girl who starts, like, her mom's really strict. Lisa's mom is really strict, played by Cheryl Ladd. And Cheryl Ladd got pregnant very young with her daughter, and she doesn't, you know, does not want her daughter having going down that path, and sends her to Catholic school and all this kind of stuff. So she's very strict, and she's not allowed to date or do anything with her friends.
Sounds like my family.
So then Lisa and her little friend kind of run amok, and they start prank calling all these guys and kind of playing around on the phone. And Lisa has this persona that she has this kind of phone voice that she puts on, and she's this like sexy lady on the phone. Like, she's kind of pretending to be her mom because her mom is the beautiful and glamorous Cheryl Ladd. So then one of the guys that she just randomly starts prank calling is a serial killer, turns out. And he's terrorizing the city and killing all these women. And of course, I'm calling him and having all these, you know, sexy chats with him, not knowing, you know, that he's who he is. So then and he has some, like, you know, the newspapers have given him, I forget what his name, they've given him one of those killer names. He's like the silk stocking killer or something like that.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. And then he ends up at the end, of course, the big what we've all been waiting for is he, of course, comes to get Lisa and her mom, and it's an epic battle to the death.
This is a feature of
Lisa and her mom, mm-hmm. like just fighting it out to the death with this guy, and who's gonna come out on top, the serial killer, or are these two gonna survive this encounter?
So let's go back for a second. Step by Step gets canceled, but then picked up again by another network.
Well, did they cancel it, or I don't
ABC
really
had decided that they were done. Their whole lineup was sort of, they were transitioning, right? So they had this TGIF lineup, and it had worked very well for them for a number of years, and they decided we're going a different direction. All the shows are kind of done, and we're not going to re-up that programming. And CBS was like, actually, we're thinking about doing a Friday night lineup because we feel like we've missed that boat. And if you guys aren't going to do it anymore, we'll take it. So then they took us for a year, and we were just on it for a year. But I can't remember who even we were paired with.
I don't either. But there was supposed to be a big, I mean, I think we all kind of knew.
It was called like the CBS Friday night block party or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly. Right. And then, yeah, so I think everybody kind of guessed that there probably wasn't going to be another season. So there was a few episodes at the end of the season where my character was going to marry her boyfriend, Rich, and there was going to be a big, huge wedding.
Played by Jason Marsden.
Yes, Jason Marsden. It was going to be at the house, and that was going to kind of be this really sweet ending of the show. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we were planning this thing like a wedding. Like, I had a vision board in my dressing room.
Stop.
Hold on. At the direction of the wardrobe, the costumers, they wanted me to make this vision board of all the dresses that I liked. We went wedding dress shopping. Oh my God, it was hardcore.
It was going to be this, like, but it was going to be the end of the show.
It was the end of the show.
Right. So
you knew
that you were only picked up for a season? Is that what?
Yeah, it was I think we just guessed that there wasn't going to be another one. That it was a safe guess.
Yeah.
So this was going to be, this really nice kind
of
end.
And we kind of all sort of had that feeling. So it was like, okay, cool. There's going to be a wedding at the end. It's going to be.
Who was
like,
your maid of honor?
Well, it was these two, of course. It was Lakin and Angela Watson, and we picked out their bridesmaids' dresses. They were in shades of champagne, thank you very much, which was
really
very
nice,
like,
taste,
fashion
I
forward
feel.
At the time. There was going to be a champagne color. There was going to be like a light, like taupey, maybe a blush. I forget. They were all slightly different shades. Those were all bought and paid for, everything. And then instead of just waiting till the end of the season, they canceled us. Like three
Shut
episodes
up.
Short. Yep. So this like three episode arc or whatever it was going to be of like, okay, they're getting married. Now we're planning the wedding. And then the grand finale, last episode, wedding, we didn't get to do. And it was such a emotional glass of cold, just throw, cold water in the face to
had
not
you,
get
oh, wait,
to
had
end
you
like
shot
that.
It or you didn't even shoot
no,
it?
But it was being planned kind of like a wedding. All of these things were purchased and planned in advance.
So who called? You get a call from your agent saying, hey,
No. I think it was like a come to Jesus, like, after notes one night, or a, hey guys, we have something we need to say to everybody. I feel like it might have been one of those.
I don't remember that. I just remember there was some
this
party.
This is actually going to be our last episode. And we were all like, what?
I don't remember that.
Like, this is the last one?
There was a party on the lot, And it was all the like ER people, like ER was shot just a few stages down from us. And there was all these people from these other shows, you know, George Clooney was probably like walking around in Scrubs or something.
So fun.
I don't know.
Are you on the Warner Brothers lot?
Yeah. Okay.
And they shot like two, it was like us, then the alleyway, then Family Matters, and then ER.
Right. And so everybody was there. And I remember walking in and seeing Patrick Duffy drinking a glass of wine. And I had never seen him drink. Ever. He joked about how he liked, you know, his wine or whatever, but I never saw him drink. And when I saw that glass of wine in his hand, I was like, oh no, something is wrong.
Something's up.
And that's, I feel like when I found out,
maybe
I think Patrick told me at that party. I don't know.
That notes night, let's say, that was the last time you showed up to work?
I just remember hearing it and feeling like it wasn't like I remember hearing it and being like, wait, huh? And it was the episode, I think, that we were shooting the following week was going to be the last.
Got it.
So, but it was quick. It was like we had like a 5-day notice or something. It wasn't even like normal jobs that give you like a 2-week notice.
Firing ever.
Yeah, and they couldn't just let the season end. And it wasn't like we had 20 more episodes to do. There was two or three more that were going to be this wedding arc.
Like, just give us an ending.
Sad. Yeah.
You know?
And for the fans.
And for the fans
to have a real end.
Is there talks about doing a reunion?
Everybody asks me that. Like, I get that question probably more than anything else. I mean,
I don't see why. I mean, I know you don't think so. I don't see why not. I think Patrick and Suzanne would totally do it.
I think Patrick and Suzanne would do it. If we could work out, you know, if you could work on the weekends.
Yes.
For those of you who don't know, Stacey has a completely different career now.
Yeah, but we're going to get to that. I'm not done with this career.
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I want to hear what happened after. So. Like, you did start doing features and stuff, right?
Oh, like directly after we finished.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, there was...
Step by Step's over. What age are we at now?
I was 19. In my early 20s. Yeah.
Okay, so...
I was in my first year of college. Yeah, I was 19.
You had finished college already?
No, I didn't go until... Lakin and I were at UCLA together, actually. But I didn't go... Right after I graduated high school, I didn't think I was going to go. I applied to Yale, and Yale was the only school I was going to leave my job for. I did not get into Yale, so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going. And then I had a boyfriend at the time who convinced me belatedly that I should go. So I was just like, okay, I think you're right. So I applied to UCLA, started UCLA, and I think there was only one season... Yeah, one season of the show where I was trying to be in school and do, and it was at the very end, and try to do it at the same time, and it just wasn't working. So I kind of deferred and then went back and finished. And then, yeah, we were together there for at least a couple years,
so
and then
graduated basically at the same time. You were still auditioning and still working in the business at that time, too?
Yeah, I mean, I was also like, oh, I've been working my whole life. I mean, because I started when I was 4, and I just... You know, and Step by Step was 7 years. Hi, yeah. Yeah, that's Lakey's baby there, Georgia.
She's the worst baby ever.
She's terrible.
I'm kidding. I'm her worst godfather ever.
Yes, that's her laughing in the background. So, yeah, I mean, I had a holding deal with those same producers for a year or something. And, oh, yeah, that was one thing. Yeah, they offered me the part of – they were doing some show with the Olsen twins where, you know, it's the dad and then there's a nanny to these two – he's a single dad, of course, and he has a nanny to the two twin girls. And then, of course, they're going to fall in love, the nanny and the dad, and become a family in this whole thing. So they offered me the part of the nanny, and I was just kind of like, I mean, I felt like I had done that show already for so long, and I didn't. So that was kind of what the holding deal, what came of it, and I didn't take that. Maybe I should have. I don't know. But, yeah. So then, yeah, I was just auditioning, but I mean, I didn't care that much. I was just having fun going to UCLA and... being a full-time student and not really worrying about...
And you're majoring in...
Art history.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because this is where it gets all twisted. So then you finish UCLA.
Right.
And then what happens?
I mean, yeah, I was auditioning nothing really was happening. I just wasn't, I would do stuff here and there.
But there was a point in your career where you're like, I'm sort of like, okay, I don't want to do this anymore. Or do you still want to do it? Or are you?
No, there was a point. There was a long time where it just wasn't good. Like I was auditioning for stuff. I wasn't booking things.
Or you're auditioning for things where you know what, we've said this before, right, a lot, that like the auditioning is the work. And like the fun is getting the job.
Yeah.
But then sometimes you would even get a job and you're like, is this life changing?
Right.
Like I was just on a TV show for a really long time. And yes, we all have to just kind of go job to job sometimes. But like even this job is like not that fun.
No. And you know? I wasn't good at auditioning, I think. I think when I was a kid, I could do it because I just didn't care. I would walk into, you know, a network, you know, the network audition is the last audition. And I would walk into network, like eating a piece of pizza and just, I just didn't care at all about anything. And then now as an adult, that maybe made a difference because now does. I cared and I just couldn't audition anymore. I was just really bad at it. And it was terrible, you know? And then the jobs I was getting, a lot of them I did some terrible movies. I mean, I did a movie and then went to the screening, the cast and crew screening, and walked out of the screening. It was
oh my God.
It was unwatchable. What movie was that? I don't want to say. If you look, it's this. I haven't done that many movies. If you look on IMDb, it'll be pretty easy to figure it out. But
okay, well,
I walked out.
What's
it was
your
that
worst
bad
audition ever?
You know, I thought about that, knowing that your stage show,
we were going to ask you that,
was the worst audition. Oh boy, I couldn't narrow down. I mean, the one that comes to mind actually was one where you were supposed to, hi, that's Georgia saying hi, hi.
Hi.
That's her big line, apparently. Hi. So yeah, they were looking for like the hot girl, you know, the pretty girl. So I got all dolled up and I had this dress and it was like a short dress that was low in the front and I had the high heels and I was all done up. And they did that thing where they, you know, there's the waiting room and then at a certain point they bring you back and have you stand outside of the room that you're going to be doing the audition in. So I'm standing there by myself, just kind of up against the wall, you know, waiting to go into this room and somebody else is in there. And facing me, there's this, you know, assistant or somebody at a desk. And she's probably around my same age. And, you know, she's dressed for a production office. She's wearing, you know, very comfy, very casual, like jeans and like a button down shirt and sneakers or something. And she's sitting at her desk and she's looking at me in this little tiny low cut dress with the heels and the whole thing. And she just kind of is staring at me and she's looking at me up and down. And then she goes, I don't know how you do it.
What?
Wow.
And I was like, oh, burn, you know? And I think I said to her, I don't know how I do it either. And it was just one of those
kind of like the
terrible moments. And I went in there and during that audition, I was reading and I remember, and they were taping it, and I remember looking up at one point and the director was this kind of like middle-aged guy and he was hunched over. He had his hand on his forehead and he was just massaging his temples like,
oh, God,
this is the most painful audition I have ever seen. Like just he looked like he just wanted to kill himself listening to me read this scene. And it was one of those ones. I mean, it wasn't a big cataclysmic, but there was, you know, event, but there was just a few moments in there where I was just,
you know, and after something like that, it's kind of like, there are moments sometimes when, you know, and I've said this to myself, I'm in a waiting room and I'm like, I don't feel like I belong here. I didn't feel like I wanted to even audition for this when I read it, but I felt obligated to do it. And so I put on my shoes and I put my makeup on and I went to work. And you get there and you feel like a fraud. And then it just gets worse, actually, as you get into the room. It doesn't get better. But it doesn't get better. You know what I mean?
Like I'll give you a little perspective on my end. Every job I've booked, and I'm telling you, every single one of them, the director has walked up to me and said, I had to fight for you.
Oh, God.
Every single
Thank
one.
Thank you so much
Thank
for that.
You.
I had to fight for you. Business.
But, and you know, there's so many, like, indignations with it, you know? Because you're just at the mercy of other people all the time, and whether they're having a good or bad day or whatever it is. But the fact is, you've probably spent at least an hour or two reading the script and then preparing the lines or maybe getting coached and then at least another hour or two getting ready and driving yourself down there. And, you know, so for you, it's like sometimes it's a day or two investment into one audition to have someone just sort of like dismiss you. And it can get kind of like crazy making.
Well, and
that's the work. That's the hard stuff nobody talks about.
Yes, it's a lot. And the number of times that you're sitting there in the waiting room waiting, and as you're doing that, there's a casting assistant calling, offering the part that you're auditioning for to Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, all right. And then any number of people, they're making multiple offers to multiple people for what you're auditioning for. And they don't even have the decency to not do it in your face as you're sitting there. And yes, you've driven to Venice at 4 o'clock on a Thursday and you've got the outfit on and you've gotten coached for it at, you know, 3:50 for half an hour or whatever it is. I mean, not that anyone out there is going to be, you know, shedding a tear for actors, but there are some pretty depressing
moments
and bleak parts. Sometimes.
Well, it's also, and as an actor, I don't know if you do this, but I know you do and I do it, and I'm assuming you will too, is the car ride home from the audition, where you're going through the audition over and over in your head, and you're re-auditioning.
And now you're actually doing it well.
And you're doing amazing.
When you were in there, it was terrible.
You're amazing.
And now you're just
kicking
ass.
Amazing. And
totally.
It's always on the way home, and you're like every single line.
But you're like, why did I think to say it like that?
Every beat. Did you love school?
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a smarty pants, let's be honest.
Well, thank you.
Secret nerd.
So is Lakin, 100%. But yeah, I'm super, super into school. My sister and I were both really into it.
There's a moment where you're like, I'm going back to school.
When you're also like doing well in school and enjoying it. And it's kind of like, really? 4 o'clock on a Friday to go in for something that I really don't think I'm right for? Like, fuck this.
Well, I'm also segueing because you majored in art history and your career is not art history.
Yeah, because when I went to college, I wanted to just enjoy it. And like, it wasn't something I was going to need to get a job out of, you know, because after working my whole life, I just wanted to pick a major that was fun, that I liked. And I, no matter how impractical it was, and art history is highly impractical, it was a bunch of like well-dressed white ladies sitting around looking at pictures in class together. I mean, it was very enjoyable though. It was very fun, very fun and very cool. And UCLA has a great program. Anyhow, so yeah, so that's why art history is just because it was fun. And I did all fun things. Like I studied abroad in South Africa. I studied abroad in Barbados.
Where in South Africa were you?
It's very important reasons to go to the Caribbean. For
mostly the water.
A semester, yes.
But we're in South Africa.
I'm sorry?
We're in South Africa.
We didn't go to Cape Town, but we were most of the time in Johannesburg. We went to Pretoria. We went on safari.
Okay. Yeah, because I spent like 3 months in Cape Town. But I went to Joburg a little bit, and I was frightened. It's scary there.
Yeah, it was a little, you know, they did the thing where the first day we were there, it was a professor accompanying this group of about 14 of us, and we were there to study the history of South Africa. So the day that we arrived on the bus, he pulls out this article about, like, you know, a rape and murder of somebody in the area, and just warning us not to. I mean, I don't know. I didn't feel particularly unsafe there, but I loved South Africa.
South Africa is life changing. For those of you who are listening that have never been, if you can go. Go.
It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It is so beautiful. The people are so, every person you meet is like, oh yes, I speak 12 languages, of course.
Yeah.
The cab driver speaks 12 languages. And it's if you go to Europe, sometimes you feel that small country feeling where it just feels so claustrophobic. Mm-hmm. And South Africa, maybe is like the States. I mean, you go there and it's a big country and it just feels big and open and it's so beautiful.
All right. So then, what year are we in now?
early 2000s.
Okay, so
Yeah, but the misery continued for a long time. It was very hard for me to finally cut bait on this because it was,
paying up the headshots.
Yeah, getting the headshots, going to acting class, because it was the only thing I knew how to do. And so now here I am, this adult. I have kind of a useless degree, sort of on purpose. I have no professional experience except for acting. And so it really dragged out for a long time for me to decide that I didn't want to do it anymore. And it just had to be a lot of bad jobs, bad auditions, a long time of just being just really down about it to finally pull the plug.
And then
when you did.
So then when I did, I was in acting class. I was sitting in acting class. I did a scene from a play called Mauritius, which was a great play. Anyway, I must say I chewed up the scenery. I kicked ass in this scene. It was very dramatic. And after it was over, I said, that is it. That is the last scene I will ever do. That is the last act. This is the last acting class I will ever take. It's a great play. I really, really cannot recommend it enough. Even if you just want to read it, it's excellent. But basically, it's about these two sisters. One sister went away because she was a half-sister and she had a wealthy side of the family. So they scoop her up and take her away to be raised in this very nice environment. And I stay behind. And it's unspoken, but this character has a really traumatic, horrible childhood. And the parents are... they're getting sick and they're dying and she stays there taking care of everybody. Anyhow, so she's left at the end. The parents are gone, in this crappy house that she's left with. And the one valuable thing that they own, they have this book of stamps that contains some extremely valuable stamps. And this is going to be her ticket out of this awful life that she's had. That is Georgia with her one of her toys.
And Christine does it again.
Sorry.
The worst podcast ever.
So that's going to be her ticket out. Anyway, so the other sister comes back from her nice life. The parents have died. She comes back for the funeral or whatever. And she claims the stamps as her own. And so it's this epic.
Oh, wow.
And it's called Mauritius because one of these extremely rare, valuable stamps is a stamp. It's from Mauritius. Anyway, so there's just this epic battle to the death between these two sisters and all that resentment, of one being stuck in that life and one being whisked away and the nerve of her to show up and say, these are mine,
Ooh, meaty.
Yeah, so it's the big dramatic scene between the two sisters where it is the fight to the death between the two of them over everything.
And the most dramatic rose ceremony.
Yes, it was very dramatic. And I said, that's it.
You nailed the scene in class.
I must say I did, yes.
And then you were like, adieu.
Yep, scene.
And did everyone in class know? Were you kind of like, that's it, I won't be back? No, that was more of a personal.
Yeah, it was just an internal thing. Yeah, and I wanted to go back to school forever because I do love school, but what can you do in art history except get a PhD, which will take you 12 years, and then your options are to be a curator, and there's like three of those jobs ever, like in the entire world.
Right.
Or you can be a scholar, a professor, which how are you going to do 12 years of school for that? It just didn't seem, the economics of it just didn't seem to work out. So then I thought, I think it was also in that moment where I was like, I know what I will do. I will go to law school. It's very short. It's only 3 years instead of 12.
Wait, law school's short?
3 years, yeah.
I don't want to go to law school.
Oh, okay, you can't go to law school.
Why can't I get a law school?
Sure, you can. The accelerated program is 2 years if you want to be crazy.
Can I get some cheats from
no.
you?
No. There's no cliff notes in law school.
Yeah, and then if you do the slow route, the night school, it takes 4 years. So I did the traditional.
I'm applying to fucking law school tomorrow.
Very short.
Where do I apply?
First, you have to do the LSATs. Good luck.
You do the LSATs.
I'll just go ahead and brag for Stacey because she won't do it for herself. But this one took the LSATs, not only got into several law schools of her choosing, but then also got scholarships. I mean, when we talk about like smarty pants, she's a smarty pants.
Oh,
and I see. Here's the thing about law school. This is why I'm obsessed with law school as well. I'm not going. Don't worry, Christine. I'm not going into law school.
God,
tomorrow,
I thought you were
going
to talk about the OJ trial.
No, I'm going to get there. But I think actors our lawyers are definitely actors, right?
Well, you have to be. I think you have to have a flair for.
You have to be able comfortable
presenting
in front of,
well, facts in front of.
It's theatrical.
A jury, right?
There are moments to of theater in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're defending a defendant or
prosecuting,
there's, and you have an audience. You have a live audience, so. You've got to convince this audience that your client is either innocent or guilty, correct?
Yeah.
So there's a whole acting. So this is like a perfect transition for an actor, I think.
Yeah. Or I say to my husband, a therapist, because I actually think that that is also just because you've done a lot of kind of your own research through the years on what makes certain characters tick. And I think that it kind of like goes hand in hand with wanting to know more about people. So I think both careers, actually, they do.
Now, there's a lot of lawyers that never go anywhere near a courtroom. Many, many types of law where that's not part of it. But I happen to be, in a courtroom intensive scenario.
I got a question for you. And I think you've told me this in the past. But like, now that you are in your career, and you've done all of your interning and you are, you're working. Has there ever been a moment where someone has recognized you and tried to, like, say on the opposite side and, like, tried to, use it against you? Like, oh, yes. I know that girl's an actress.
Yes. Actually, the first trial that I ever did, just for the record here, I'm a prosecutor, and that's the only kind of law I've ever practiced. But the first trial that I ever did, first jury trial, the defense attorney made the theme, you'll have themes that emerge in a trial. It's part of the training that you get, that you want to have a theme that you start in voir dire, which is the jury selection process. You kind of introduce this theme and then you touch upon it again in opening and you expand on it. And
so a theme would be something like... like an infidelity or a...
Right. So one that people use, for example, for a DUI. So, and maybe it's a DUI where there's nothing dramatic. There isn't a crash. Nobody's been hurt. Nobody's been killed. Somebody got stopped at a checkpoint. They're a .09 or whatever. And you're trying to get your jury to care about this, or you're trying to somehow engage them in facts that aren't that interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't used this one, but somebody will just say like, it's about choices. This person had a choice to get behind the wheel or not or whatever. So then you would talk about choices in voir dire, and then you bring it up in opening, and then maybe in your direct of one of the officers, you talk about, maybe you use that word again and you kind of drop it in there. And then in closing, you touch upon it again. So anyway, this guy made his theme step by step.
Stop it.
Yes, he
You're
did.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding.
Oh my God. Did he know that you didn't get to do the wedding episode?
No,
and
I don't
you
think
just
he knew
like
that.
Sitting there like, you motherfucker.
Yeah, he talked about, step by step,
okay,
this investigation was a failure. And step by step, the police failed to do what they should have done to blah, blah, blah. And step by step, this officer, whatever, failed to.
He is Dana fostering a lot of witnesses.
Wait a minute. So wait, you're sitting. Okay, you're sitting. I'm picturing the courtroom, right? This is pre-trial. This is jury. What is this?
We're in front of a jury, and this is his theme. And so in his closing, I don't remember if he used it in opening, but in his closing, he kept going. That was that little ditty, step by step. He kept going back to it.
Literally going, is there an objection or what are you doing?
No, I just had, tried to have no reaction. I mean, a big important part of that job is poker face a lot of the times.
Right.
And if he had seen me be it was his first trial too. We were laughing about how it was our first, and it was both of us our first. I tried to not react, but my face is pretty. My face kind of goes high speed. A lot of times it gets ahead of me and then I have to try to rein it in after it's too, it's already done its whole routine. But
and did you say anything like to the judge? Were you like, this is inappropriate? Can you say anything? Or did he say like, I know who she is and she's like, influencing the jury one way or another?
No, I don't remember I don't think I objected to it, because if you didn't know, you wouldn't... It was a theme that made good enough sense,
He was doing a subconscious.
He was doing it on purpose.
I know, but for the jury, he was saying it so that they would like it would trigger.
I think he was just having a goof, really.
Oh,
I think he was
you're
just
wrong, Stacey.
You do.
I'm sorry to tell you, I watch a lot of court. I mean, I watch Nancy Grace.
Okay. Okay.
Bombshell.
So he was trying to mess with me?
100%. He was messing with the jury. He was planting in their head is what was happening. You were a rookie then, honey. Rookie. Yes, absolutely.
Well, I mean, so you're saying he thought that would hurt my case?
No, I think what it would... you know what? If anything, it probably would have helped your case.
That's right. I mean, okay. I don't know.
Wow,
I,
you're good at this.
Unless
you just went from you're a rookie to you're good in a matter of like 0.5 seconds.
I could have been a juror just now. I'm like, oh, she switched. She switched me.
Well, then there was another guy who did... he did a motion for a new trial after, you know, we did this trial together. His guy was convicted. Ah, that's Georgia again. And afterwards, we came out of the courtroom and one of the jurors asked to take a picture with me. She said she recognized me and whatever. And she was like, I want this picture. I'm going to put it on Facebook. Like, it's so cool that, you know, whatever. And then when we came back for sentencing, he submitted a motion for a new trial on that basis, saying, you know, this juror never said, because they ask all the jurors at the beginning of every voir dire, do you recognize any of the people in the courtroom, whether it's the court reporter, any of the attorneys, right. the deputy, anybody? And she had said no. And she did say outside, she was like, I thought I went to high school with you. Right. You get that a lot too,
yeah,
right?
Like, that happens all the time, yeah.
So she was like, it wasn't until, you know, halfway through the trial and it was hearing your voice. It was the voice. And then that's when I finally figured it out. But he kind of framed it as, well, she recognized her the whole time. She purposely didn't say anything. She stayed on the jury and then she was probably back there advocating for the prosecutor because, you know, she recognizes her from some TV show or whatever. That motion was denied. There was no new trial, and there was no evidence that
it affected
that
the
she,
trial.
No.
What?
That's crazy, though.
You don't have to tell me what the trial was, but have you done any high-profile trials?
No. I mean, I'm still pretty new. I've been a lawyer for almost 4 years, so I haven't. I've done a lot of misdemeanors.
Got it.
And I've done some felony stuff, but I mean, no. I mean, I had one case out in Riverside because I was at Riverside County. Now I'm closer to home. But yeah, there was a case. It was still a misdemeanor, but it was a kid at UCR who planted a camera, a hidden camera in the dorm ladies' room.
Ew.
And then captured a lot of girls who were his friends even coming out. You know, it's a communal, so they right. take a shower and then they come out and they might be nude and they're changing and they're getting dressed and they're doing all this. And that got some coverage.
Right, right. As I guess it would.
What is the ratio of trial wins? Like, what's the percentage that you've had?
Yeah. What's my record?
Yeah.
Right now, I'm at 15-3-1. So 15 guilty, 3 not guilty, 1 hang. So 19 total.
Oh, Lord. I trials. Hope I don't get in front of you. I'll be in trouble.
But yeah. To be fair, I was in Riverside County for a lot of that time. And the Riverside County jury pool, I think, is a little more law enforcement friendly, a little more conservative than this county
oh,
being LA County. So so my record, I think, will probably change
now
that I'm in front of LA juries.
Let's say tomorrow you got offered a lawyer role on like a
CSI, like Criminal Minds.
Yeah, on a network show like the
Bull.
Would you go back?
I don't know. I just, all of the stuff about worrying how you look all the time, I don't miss that at all.
Oh, okay.
Because I would be sitting here going, I need to lose 10 pounds. My teeth are not white enough. I'm probably wrinkly. I should probably get fillers or something. What else? Just all of that. I'm just
the
so...
The vanity.
I mean, and I'm vain enough as it is, but to have
but
to go
look
to that
exactly
extreme,
the same.
I know.
It's like crazy. Like,
thank
I'm
you,
surprised
but...
that more courthouses... Well, it depends also. It's generational, obviously, because you're definitely in a specific time that you were on TV all the time during a certain time period. But you look exactly the same.
Oh,
like, that's
thank you.
Crazy that you would even think that way. But I get it. But, I mean, the passion, like, the acting bug, is it still in you? Or are you doing it through law?
Yeah, no, I don't. I mean, look, if I could just work and not have to audition for stuff,
yeah,
and have, because part of the problem is when you have a job like we had on Step by Step where we were so happy, we were such a great group, we got along so well, we, and it's such a, I mean, a job does not get any better than that. And when you have it for 7 years.
I mean, I can't imagine. The craft service.
Everything about it. Yeah, just the nicest people from the top down. It's, I mean, unless it was going to be like that again, I don't want to do projects where I walk out of the cast and crew screening because it's that unwatchable either.
Yeah.
You know, there's that too.
Right.
Have you been, I mean, like, I mean, I can't imagine like Lifetime, like their movie of the week. Like, I would be like, you would be a dream come true. She's a lawyer. She's like, are you writing at all? I mean, like,
no.
Come on, Stace.
No, but I have thought about, you know, maybe
it's
down
like the
grinder,
but in reverse.
Yeah.
What's the grinder?
The grinder's that Rob Lowe, Fred Savage show.
Oh, yes.
Where
yeah.
he's like played a lawyer for so long, but now he's like really trying to be a lawyer, but he like has zero credentials, but nobody cares.
Right.
Because he's the grinder.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it got canceled, did it?
I don't know.
I don't know. I should have looked that up.
Well, yeah, I thought maybe at some point, if, you know, once I have, you know, lots and lots of lawyering experience, maybe to do, you know, that like legal analysis type of stuff on, you know, court TV or one of those, or something, you know, where they bring somebody in to give a legal perspective on whatever the story is. But at that point, I mean, with this HD, like, I don't want to be an HD.
Oh,
I mean, especially
stop.
10 years from now. No way. Really? Seriously. Like that concerns me because I'll probably be just too long in the tooth at that point. She's like a drunk, this one,
I know,
Georgia.
She's
just constantly like staggering around, falling down.
Would you take her to court?
This one?
No, Christine for being a bad mom.
Hey!
No, I would not.
So rude. It is kind of shocking and terrible. I mean, I you know, we just did a bunch of press for Hollywood Darlings, and I ended up seeing some of it, and some of it was in HD, and I had a good like half pound of makeup on. And I was still like horrified by the HD.
Yeah, it's
I was
not,
like,
listen,
oh,
you have
no.
to get over that. It's just that's something you're gonna have to get
no,
over.
No, that's the life now.
You know, come on.
For those of you who haven't seen it, Stacey Keenan and Patrick Duffy both do an episode of Hollywood Darlings. It's very funny.
Oh yeah, so you brought but you played yourself.
I played myself.
I keep roping them back into
Lakin,
my project.
She keeps roping
us
in.
So you said
in.
Yes. What was,
like this
why?
Podcast.
I did.
Why?
Because it was Lakin. I mean, what am I going to do? Say no? I mean, of course I'm going to do it. And but even then,
I would have understood if you had said no, though, by the way.
Well,
I would have been like, she's very busy, you guys. She can't.
Oh, no. I mean, it was super fun, and it's Lakin. But it was nerve-wracking. I was like, I haven't done this in so long. It was improv, which, I mean, you said that's your strong point. I took one Groundlings class, which I was promptly told to repeat, of course. Like, I basically failed the class. So, it was just so the whole time, I'm like, oh, my God, how do I look? I probably look fat. I probably look wrinkly, my teeth, whatever. And I'm not good at improv. I'm probably not funny, like the whole thing. I mean, it was worth it to see this one and to see Patrick Duffy. But and even now, when I think back on it, I'm like, oh my God, was it horrible? I don't know.
It's really funny.
What happened?
Because the thing that's so great is, I think what fans will love is to see all of us together, of course. And then, I mean, I'm you know, in that show, I'm always kind of the butt of the joke. I'm always someone who everyone else is normal, and I'm completely abnormal and nuts. So I'm happy. You know, I'm fine being that.
I just want to fire a few things
version of
at
myself.
You. Worst date ever.
Oh.
And then you might not have any. I'm just going to ask.
Stacey and her now husband have been together for
19 years.
And is he in the business?
He is, actually. He's a filmmaker. If I can, I will plug his
Please.
Movie. It's Alistair 1918, available on Amazon Prime.
Oh,
if
great.
You don't have Amazon Prime, you can see it on Vimeo. It's a great time travel movie. So yeah, he's an actor. He's a filmmaker. But I mean, we've been together so long that he came to the set of Step by Step.
Yeah. That's when I first met him.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So it's sort of like a high school sweetheart kind of thing.
Almost. Yeah.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we've been together for a long time. And then we eloped in August. And then we had a party back here in LA in February.
You mean this past August?
Yes.
You were together for that long and you're just now getting married?
Yes. Yeah. We didn't even live together for 10 years.
Why all of a sudden? What was the change?
You know, we just started talking about, you know, for so long we didn't want to get married because we were afraid it would change things in a bad way. And then we started to, like, I guess we thought it was the secret of our success that we weren't married. And then at a certain point we
You're like Joy Behar.
What do you mean?
She waited like 20 some years before she got married to,
she did.
Yeah, to Steve.
Oh, wow. Oh, I didn't know. Yeah. Well, yeah. So then we started to think, what if it actually would make things better? Which that had never occurred to us. And it has, surprisingly. Yeah.
Did you take his
name?
It
is different in a weird way.
No, because I've never even had my own name. Yeah. Keenan is not my real name.
Oh, what's your
real
name?
Another stage name before that.
Other legal name. She's just for professional reasons.
Oh, yes, got it.
Right.
Got it.
But, you know, and then when I first started acting, it was Stacey Love. That's my middle name.
Shut up.
Yes. But then Michael Jacobs, when I got my two dads, he said, Stacey Love is a stripper.
Yeah.
This 12-year-old cannot have that name. Although, I mean, it's my mom's maiden name. That's her family name.
It's a name.
Her mom's name was Kitty Love. That was her real name.
I love a Kitty Love.
And her dad's name was Will Love. Yeah. I mean, this was a real
Love,
family,
Love,
you know?
Stacey Love.
Yes.
Love the Loves.
Right.
Love the
Love. And she actually, my mom went to high school. Actually, not just high school. It was K through 12, the same Catholic school with the Love twins. And because...
Oh, my God.
And because where her name was, like, one of them was, like, Amelia, and the other one was, like, Tatiana or something, and my mom was Jacqueline, she would be between them in the yearbook every year.
Oh, funny.
Anyway, so Love is a real last name, but to Michael Jacobs, that... was not acceptable, so we had to come up with something else. So we came up with...
Where did it come from then, Keenan?
So it was another family name was Keen. But Stacey Keen sounded like Stacey Keach.
Right.
It sounded like Peachy Keen. It was just kind of had an annoying sound to it. So then we had really good family friends who were the Keenans, so we just went Keenan.
There
yeah, but nowadays I could use my real name, but it was too ethnic then as well. Yeah, because my last name is Sigorsky, which is Russian, and was way too much for the 80s.
Right. We don't know how to spell it. There's too many letters.
Right.
That's so crazy. Okay, so now you're married and you're are you living together now?
Well, yeah, we were together for 10 years. Then we started living together. We just eloped in August.
It's been a slow process.
It's been a very gradual, methodical, almost two decades,
you know,
process. Wow. And then so we had this party in February. Ms. Lakeskins over here gave a beautiful speech, which was very very
was
precious
really?
Memory for me, and
you know,
I
definitely winged it.
No,
I winged it. It was off the cuff, but I'll have to see the footage because I remember speaking from the heart. I don't remember everything I said.
That was very
but it
sweet
was
and
really
funny
fun
and hilarious, in true Lakeskins style. Yeah, Lakin became Lakeskins long ago.
I love an oyster.
Oh yeah, we had an oyster guy.
Champagne and oysters, guys.
Yeah,
I mean, that can really loosen a person up.
No, we're from the Philadelphia area, the main line of Philadelphia. And then we were, you know, coming to New York all the time to audition. And we were taking the train to New York like 5 times a week. It was getting ridiculous. So then we moved to New York. We lived in New York City. We were there for almost 4 years, like 3rd grade to 6th grade for me. And then
what school did you go to in New York when you were a
kid? PS 158.
Okay.
Do you know that one?
No, because a lot of the actor kids, like Lindsay Price, forget what the school was called, but it was like...
Some performing arts school?
Yeah, it was like a performing... It wasn't a performing art. It was like, especially for kids that were working.
Oh, yeah. There was one of those out here, too. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, right? Like in the...
Oh, yeah.
I can't remember the name of it, but there... Yeah. No, my sister went to LaGuardia. My sister went to the Fame
LaGuardia
High School.
Yeah, I have friends that went there.
Yeah.
Where did you live in New York?
Well, yeah, we were completely broke.
Okay.
There was nowhere, we couldn't afford to live anywhere. So we moved in with my mom's first cousin, who was a professional dancer, and he had an apartment, a huge apartment. It was a 7-room apartment.
What?
With
12
foot, hold on, but there's a catch, a pretty big catch. With 12 foot ceilings and hardwood floors. This was on 106th Street between Columbus and Manhattan. So at the time in the 80s, this was Spanish Harlem. It was a horrible area. Like, right. I cannot begin to express to you. I mean, it was bad. Like, people all the time would break into the lobby, because of course the lobby door was locked, but people would break in, buy and sell crack in the lobby, pee in the lobby. So there would be huge puddles of urine with the little tiny crack baggies floating in it that you would have to try vault over to get into the building.
Where has this story been? Go ahead.
Yeah, it was, there were cockroaches, there were rats, we had mice.
You're like what?
Third grade to sixth grade, because we couldn't afford to live anywhere. So, it was fine for him. He was a grown man. He paid $400 a month for this enormous apartment, but the area was desperately bad. But like I said, we couldn't afford anything but to live with him. And he somehow let his cousin and her little girls move in with him.
Oh, my gosh.
It was crazy. Actually, when Time Magazine broke the story about this new drug called crack, there was a picture on the cover of a crack house, and that crack house was across the street from our building. God. And all the neighbors were talking about it. It was our claim to fame. Like, hey, we're on Time
Almost
Magazine.
On the cover of Time.
It was a really crazy time.
And did you book? Wow. Were you doing theater in New York, or were you?
I did theater. I did summer stock. I sang as a kid. I did tons of jingles. That was probably how we survived mostly as a family, was just on jingles. Because I did at that time. I mean, now they just buy a Coldplay song, but at that time they would write a song. Mm-hmm. You know, they would record this music and hire people to come in and sing. Mm-hmm. And you know, if they needed a kid voice, I just booked tons of those jingles.
Stacey Love.
That's right. Right. That's right. Then I had my golden My Little Pony gig for a while there. I did commercials. Yeah, print, everything. Did some TV. But then it seemed like the big jobs, like the TV shows, they were always hiring somebody in California. So we decided to come out for pilot season. And that pilot season, we got an apartment in North Hollywood. It was infested with lice.
Oh, God.
We were sleeping on the floor because the only way we could afford to get our stuff out was on that really slow truck where they put your stuff in the truck and then they make all the stops and they gradually unload it. So it takes months for your stuff to get there. So we were just sleeping on our clothes and towels on the floor, and we didn't know that the apartment was infested with lice. So we all got lice.
Oh, God.
That was nice. And then that pilot season, there was my two dads and there was two other shows that I tested for. And, you know, they make you do that thing when you go to network. If they're going to bring you to network, they make you commit, to which... Because they're not going to take you
in first position.
Right. And so there was another show that I was going to network on that was already picked up for 13. And my two dads was not picked up. So my mom and my sister and I just kind of sat down and we read all the scripts and we decided to make the commitment to my two dads, even though it was not picked up and the other one was, because it was the best script.
Do you remember what the other one was?
One of them was Juliette Lewis ended up doing it. It was the one with... Oh gosh, it was another one with like a single dad, uh-huh. And he has the kids and he gets the nanny, but the nanny is a Latina lady, uh-huh. And then he ends up falling in love with her and they become a family, and I don't remember the name of the show, but Juliette Lewis was the daughter.
Oh, wow, but it didn't go past the 13?
No, it did. I think it lasted a little bit, but it didn't last as long as my two dads, I don't think.
Wow, what a gamble.
Yeah, so we picked my two dads and... It ended up being...
Especially like you're sleeping on the floor, lice infested apartment, and you're like debating like, do I go for the 13 episodes or go for a maybe this will get picked up moment? That's a lot. Your mom was very...
Yeah, my mom was very smart and a good business person. And yeah, we all agreed it was the best writing.
I remember this about Stacey's mom. After we did the pilot, or as we were doing the pilot of Step by Step, and like, you know, I'm so green. It's like literally my second time in Los Angeles ever. We're staying at in a suite somewhere where, you know,
Hilton.
No, they had to put us up because we didn't live here. Yeah. So we went from like the Calabasas Hilton to the Century Plaza Hotel in Century City, which is like a much nicer hotel, by the way.
But like, and like, I think it was the second or third day, and you know, here's my mom wearing her like windbreaker, like from Atlanta, probably with like a visor, you know, there's some kind of, and Stacey's mom, like, been there, done that. Hi, we were living with lice. Like, it looks at my mother at some point and just says, she's like, well, don't get your hopes up. These things, it's just a pilot. These things rarely go. And just like walked away. And, but it was sage advice. She meant it in a really like, don't move all your stuff. Don't uproot your life. This may or may not, this may be over in a week. Like, it may not be anything, even through like the first year. It wasn't until like the third year of the show that my parents are like, maybe we should make LA a more permanent home, and like actually buy things and not rent everything. So, but I mean, you know, so you
do you remember
never
what
know.
What the part, the other show was?
Yes. So Stephen just found it. It was I Married Dora.
I Married Dora.
I don't know that.
I don't know this show either.
I remember My Two Dads, and I remember I Married Dora.
Well, see, once again, they made a great decision. Wow. Okay, for anyone who is looking up I Married Dora, you should definitely take note of this. I'm assuming those are his three children, and that one's not the nanny. Okay, she looks like she's 14.
That must be Dora.
I'm a little
that's
confused.
Dora.
Wait, this starred, just so we all know, Juliette Lewis. Yeah, she's really the most, she's really the one that we, Daniel Hugh Kelly, Elizabeth Pena, Juliette Lewis, Jason
Horst. Knight Rider guy.
Oh, Elizabeth Pena. Yeah.
You know her.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Stephen, I need to bring you into this. Do you remember, or are you too young to remember My Two Dads?
I remember seeing it on TV as a kid, but it was definitely probably like already in repeats or whatever at that point, because I
saw it.
Because that was like the, yeah, I was.
Did you watch Step by Step? Mm-hmm. Don't feel like you're obligated.
No,
to say
I did.
Yes.
I mean, okay. The theme song is still stuck in my head now. So.
We'll both cry if you say no, yeah. But you know, it's okay.
I think I only watched a few episodes, to be honest with you.
Well, you were older. You were probably like going out and doing things.
I was drinking.
You weren't in our demo. Our demo was women 18 to 34 and children 2 to 17. So it was young moms with their kids. Mm-hmm. And we were usually the number two show in
you
that demographic.
Damn statistics. Yeah. It's so lawyery. It's like she just like fucking rebuts. Like she's like, oh yeah? Well, you weren't in our demo. And blah, 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 blah.
It's true, though.
And guess what, Stacey? I object. I could have been in the damn demo. Don't.
Well, I object to you not watching our show.
Well,
retroactively, 20 years ago or whatever it was, I want you to go get in your time machine and go back and watch the show, okay? Thank you.
So this is where the podcast ends, and I know this is kind of odd, but we just had too much good stuff with her that we didn't know where to cut it off. And literally, it's like a 2-hour episode. So, lucky you, this is part one. And next week will be part two with the lovely, the amazing, the ubiquitous, the always surprising, and always enduring Stacey Keenan. I hope you guys enjoyed this as much as we enjoyed talking with her. She's such an interesting and fascinating and very, very intelligent person. And we loved having her on the show. So I hope you guys enjoyed this, and more to come next week. Make sure you follow us at Worst Ever Podcast on Instagram, Worst Ever PC on Twitter. You can follow me, Christine Lakin, at Yo Lakin on all social media, and Alec Led at Alec Led. Hey, if you've had a worst ever experience, you have a question, you have a thought, you want to love us, you want to hate us, whatever, I'm into it. Go ahead and email us at worsteverpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks again, as always, to our amazing producer and engineer, Stephen Ray Morris. Follow him at Stephen Ray Morris because he's super fancy and he does a lot of other people's super fancy podcasts. And you may want to check those out too. Okay, have a good week, or have a horrible week. If you do, email me. Bye.